began to see just how much other ways you can learn math other than a pencil and paper workbook.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
My name is Julie Brennan, and I'm first and foremost a parent. I've got four children. So I've got two daughters, 6 and 8, and I've got two sons who are 10 and a half, and one's almost 14. And we've been homeschooling, in some form or another since my youngest started kindergarten. I originally worked as a CPA. I had a full-time career and eventually went down to half-time and eventually had to quit because I've got a full-time job here with my kids. And San Diego is a very fairly large homeschooling community. And so over the years, we've done co-op type activities. So I've done some site-based teaching. I ran a co-op last year where I did classes around the lesson plans that I write, a living math and history course. So you can actually learn math through studying history for kids and families that prefer, you know, studying something from the human angle versus, you know, just studying the math. And so I did something like that. This year, I have a very small group of families that we do, you know, co-op activities with. And so I'm teaching some kids some algebra. And so I just kind of free flow when it comes to teaching, that kind of thing. And then we're also involved with what's called the San Diego Math Circle. Here in San Diego, there's an organization that hosts at UCSD weekly classes for math-gifted or math-motivated or interested kids. Probably about once a month or so, I go and I'll teach a class there on something. I get to pick whatever I want to teach. You know, so I did, the last one I did was math and art, like maybe a class on Pythagorean, you know, mathematics and anything that relates to Pythagoras, and we did one on Thales and I think one on Archimedes. I teach when I have a chance, but I'm not doing any full-time because of the ages of my kids. It takes too much time.
Okay, let's talk about living math. What is it?
Living math, the term came to my mind because years ago I was heavily influenced by Charlotte Mason writings, and they talk a lot about living books and using living literature to teach subjects with. And so the first thing that I did when we began to move away from like a structured curriculum approach to our learning was I started going into literature-based programs for history and even like science. And I could find guides, you know, Sunlight's one, there's five in a row, there's all these different types of guides out there that show you how to study through literature, but there was nothing for math. The only thing that you could find for math recommended on a regular basis was something like Saxon, or you know, some of the better programs that we found, you know, with something like Math UC, but there's still strictly math curriculums that just teach you math with very little context. And so once we learned that you could learn through real life resources, I started looking around, and I had had a very good friend who had a son who was very gifted in math, and she had discovered books like Marilyn Burns' I Hate Mathematics, and another very early classic that we picked up was a book called The Number Devil. Then there's John Sciesca and The Math Curse. We found Math for Smarty Pants, and we found all these math readers. And my son was a heavy reader. He loved to read, and he struggled very much putting anything, you know, pencil to paper. But when I would hand him a math book to read, he would literally, you know, just immerse himself in learning math in a reading context. Over a period of 3 or 4 or 5 years, I began to see just how much other ways you can learn math other than a pencil and paper workbook. And we started out with the math literature, and he did a lot. He found a series called The Murderous Maths, which are kind of fun, a little bit like graphic novels. They're not all comic book, but there's a lot of comics in them, and they're kind of in-your-face humor, which was very appealing for him. And he started doing a lot of his own math as he was kind of jumping off of what he was reading in the books and discovering math on his own. And then I would find other materials that would, you know, he would tell me what he was studying in one of the books, and then I would go and I would find other materials that would kind of dovetail with what he was doing. And so it kind of sent me on a little bit of a quest, you know, to find what was out there other than curriculums for math. And I found that there's a lot out there. You know, a lot of people have no idea there is such a thing as a math reader. Or other types of math curriculums. When I discovered a lot of these materials and I started using the same kinds of materials with my younger kids, I decided to put them all in one place on that website, which I've been building now. In May, it'll be 2 years. Mm-hmm. I've been starting to just kind of put it together as one place where you can go to find, you know, information on non-traditional learning methods for math. You know, over the years, I had collected a whole bunch of links, and a lot of people on their own blogs or their own websites might have one or two suggestions or one or two links or a few books, and I've done what I can to kind of accumulate all that I had found over these numbers of years into one place. Even a lot of people who unschool or are very relaxed about how they approach other subjects, there's so much anxiety about math. And so there's a lot of people even on, I host an email list called the Living Math Forum, and there's a lot of people there who are either unschoolers or they're relaxed. They like to be relaxed in how they learn, but they don't know how to do that when it comes to math. And a lot of it has to do with how they themselves were taught. Math was taught in a very isolated way. It didn't have any link to any other subject, and so it's hard to pass on something that you yourself, you know, don't know. I think for me, one of the big aha moments for a lot of people who join the list is, yeah, you can apply the same principles of learning to these other subjects can be applied to math, but it seems to require a bigger leap of faith or in the child being able to learn than other subjects, because I think a lot of us had trouble learning math when we were younger, the way we were taught. There is more than one way to learn. All four of my own children have very different learning styles. So my oldest learned a lot from reading books, but my second son is not a reader. He has learned, he's actually learned a lot from curriculum because that's the way that he would choose to read. He also watches a lot of math videos, and he and I will work puzzles together. So he's still kind of on a non-traditional track. But his learning style is different than my son's. So what worked for my son, my oldest son, isn't necessarily what's going to, you can't just copycat a method all the way across. It's more, living math is more of a collection of ideas. It's almost like a toolkit. You know, you can pull one idea. If that doesn't work, you can experiment with another idea. And it's more or less a try what works, what clicks with your child, rather than this is one method, you follow this sequence A, B, C, D, and apply this, and this will, you know, always work for you.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
Your thoughts on learning history of mathematics. Could you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, in all of the time that I spent taking math classes and all the time I spent in college, it never even occurred to me that math had a history. You know, I had almost no exposure to math history, a little bit to science, but I went to a seminar about 3 years ago. Some people may have heard of the Thomas Jefferson Education Seminars, And sometimes it's referred to as classical unschooling, which was very attractive to me because I do love a lot of classical writings. I enjoy mm-hmm. reading. And so I'm attracted to a classical style of education, but I'm not attracted to something that is a curriculum, you know, that's a very dictated method. Mm-hmm. And so I was very intrigued by the thought of, you know, how would you combine classical learning with a relaxed or even an unschooling style? And so in this seminar, one of the, it was like a couple days seminar, one of the speakers gave a fairly lengthy talk on how to study math, art, and science through literature and through studying the masters. One of the books that they recommended was a series called Mathematicians Are People Too by Louetta Reimer. So they had a couple of those books at the seminar. I bought the series and I took it home and I started reading it aloud to my kids. And it was amazing to me as an adult to see how interesting these stories made math and science to a non-math or science-oriented person. It humanized it. You know, the stories were fun. They would tell a lot about the individuals who actually discovered math, things that happened in their lives that were just, you know, interesting stories. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a lot of math in the books themselves, but what we found ourselves doing as a family was going off and researching on our own, huh? You know, in the story about Pascal, it talks about Pascal's triangle. So we would go off and we would try to see, how does this thing work? We found a lot of additional materials on Pascal's triangle. We might spend a whole week learning about Pascal's triangle after reading about the triangle. And it was just one of the elements of something that he had discovered. And Archimedes, you know, and how he found, he came up with a very close approximation of the number pi. Well, rather than just reading about it, we found out how he did it, and then we tried to duplicate his method and imitate what he did so we could understand how he came up with his method. Did that with Thales and how he measured, you know, the pyramids. And so by actively pursuing and trying to even, you know, kind of duplicate or recreate what these people did when they were discovering their mathematics, it made it much more meaningful, and it was much easier to remember the methods, you know, that they used. We've done that. I think each book has about 15 stories, so there's like 30 individuals. And then from there, it's like a jumping off point. Once you find yourself interested in one individual or one of the ideas that individual discovered, then it sparks or stimulates an interest that, you know, you go off and you find other ways to study it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you read about that individual or you come across that name in another book and you start making connections. A lot of the math readers that I've mentioned, they bring up and they might discuss very briefly Archimedes or Pythagoras or Thales or Hypatia, or, you know, these are some of the ancient, you know, the great ancient mathematicians.
Mm-hmm.
And the Murderous Math books often has little vignettes in the comics that have some of these, you know, old ancient guys talking to each other. And so for my son, having read the stories that had more of the details of what these individuals were going through and what they were discovering, he had a context to place those comics in. It makes it exciting, you know, and this is actually a really important point about that is a lot of the parents out there who are homeschooling are women. And when I was growing up, math was taught in a way often that was more conducive for boys to learn it. And oftentimes the humanities were taught in a way that were more conducive for girls. You know, where oftentimes, you know, there are some developmental differences in how girls and boys develop that they catch up by high school. And they've proven that if girls tend to be a little slower in math, they can catch up by high school if they haven't already gotten drilled in their head that they can't do math. Same thing with boys in writing and humanities. You know, they've done these scientific studies that they all kind of catch up and level off. What's happened is, you know, a lot of women, there's more women than men that tend to be aversive to math. I think that's fairly commonly known. And definitely, you know, the vast majority of women who are people who join the Living Math Forum list are women who are the homeschooling parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for women who either didn't learn math competently or they learned it competently but they didn't learn to appreciate it or enjoy it, history provides a context, because a lot of humanities-oriented women enjoy reading and they enjoy history. So it gives them a basis to find something to share and enjoy with their kids, which just sitting down with a math curriculum and cranking out math problems in a workbook is not very enjoyable. And I can say that from personal experience. You know, for me, my path to math was through applications. It was through really using math for something. Just endlessly working problems on a page has never been exciting to me.
CFMU.
My oldest son is my guinea pig, obviously. He's my first, and I affectionately refer to him as my guinea pig because, of course, every experiment started with him. And, I think what's happening with him, it's interesting you mentioned that David Albert was the source of where you saw this. One of the influences he's had on me has been to look for mentors for my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I do find that the older they get, they respond to other people teaching them better than me. And so right now, for example, my oldest son, we did a lot of studying ourselves together up until he was about 12. And then this last year or so, right now he's taking an algebra class from somebody else. I could teach him, but this is something that he chose to do this year because we had been doing a lot of non-traditional learning. We had been kind of grazing on a lot of different types of math concepts over the years. He had an opportunity to take a high school geometry class when he was 11 and a half. So he actually got a lot of his high school geometry in that class, and geometry was his first love. So I allowed him to study math in the sequence that he chose, not mm-hmm. the sequence that I gave him. I didn't say you have to take algebra before you take geometry. It was, great, you're motivated, you want to try this, I'll support you in every way that I can. Now he's looking at the fact that he's a year or two away from being able to take community college courses, so he's driving his own decisions, including how he's studying math. And it's become important to him now to know how it's like to sit in a structured, systematic class, to handle homework being assigned on a regular basis, turning in homework, taking tests. And so that's what he's chosen to do. You have to understand, I am a traditionally educated person. My traditional education served me well. You know, that college degree opened doors for me. I was a straight-A student, you know, in high school, and that opened doors for me. So I kind of have had in the back of my mind, it's not been a natural thing for me to experiment. You know, mm-hmm. that's been something that my son got me to do because what we were trying with him was not working, you know. And so if something wasn't broken, you know, I don't know that this website would even have existed without him, because he's the one who drove me off that beaten path. I do know that with my son, who lacked a lot of, we never did a pre-algebra course with him. You mm-hmm. know how much time does school spend, 2 or 3 years on pre-algebra, basically the course of instruction for middle school. During that time, he was taking his geometry class, and he was basically doing a lot of the math reading, and he didn't need it. He stepped right into algebra, and what few little gaps or weaknesses that he had, he was able to fill them very quickly just by using those skills in the algebra class. So it is very true. There's a school of thought called Better Late Than Early. A couple of authors who are pioneers in the homeschool movement, the Moores, they've written for, you know, quite a while that, you know, early often isn't better. And I'm finding that with my younger kids, if I just sit back and let them come to me, you know, with what they want to learn, their minds are open to it. And I'm not going back to Charlotte Mason as well. They're not little containers to stuff with facts,
right,
you
right.
know. And I do find that they learn very, very quickly when they show me that they're prepared. They learn ideas that a curriculum might spend a whole year on. They could learn it in a week. You know, I take my 8-year-old daughter right now. She's at an age, she would be, if she was in school, she would be finishing up second grade, going into third grade. And there's usually they have a very methodical way about teaching kids multiplication. She's been exposed through math readers. When we read math readers, you know, the Hello Math series, the Math Start series, and a bunch of the other readers that I have on my pages, I don't look at her and say, you know, oh, you haven't had multiplication yet, we're not going to read the multiplication readers. We read them all. They're fun stories. She's not reading them to master these concepts. But what seems to happen is it does seem to do this kind of preparing the ground effect. And kids, younger kids, really enjoy and love repetition. That, you know, the read it again. You know, I pulled out this Multiplying Menace book. It was a new book. It's a retelling of the Rumpelstiltskin tale. It's a fairly new math reader. Read it once, read it again. And I read it again. And please read it again. I read it 3 times and I said, I've got to. But they're drilling math ideas through the repetition of reading these books. So the other day when I sat down to do an activity with my daughter that involved multiplication, she's already multiplying. And I've never actually formally sat down and taught her this is how you multiply. You know, she learned to skip count from counting things on pages, you know, with the Greg Tang books. And then she learned that if you skip count 4, 8, 12, 16... well, that's 4 fours.
Mm-hmm.
And then she learned that 4 times 4 is 16. And she's made all of those leaps without a traditional curriculum to teach it. And ironically, we usually use a curriculum as the last step in her learning process, which is, now can you write down and express in a traditional format what you've learned in these other non-traditional ways?
When you just said about the multiplication, I had my daughter, same age, was learning just for playing Yahtzee.
Yeah, games.
Yeah.
Someone said the other day, it's true, games are to math what reading is, you know, to language. Games are a huge part of, you know, what we do. I remember way back when, before I kind of had re-educated my own mind, I looked at games as being supplementary, you know, and if we have time, we'll play a game. Well, now I realize that if they're interested in playing games, they can play games all day. They're going to be learning all day. They're going to be drilling math ideas if they're playing, you know, games that involve computation. My son told me that's how he learned all of his math facts, was playing Monopoly, Monopoly Junior, Yahtzee, was how he mastered, you know, his math facts with speed.
And then you had a nice idea about strewing.
It's, you know, any place where you want to build an environment where a child can go in, find things that they can choose on their own to learn from. And actually, even I think to some degree, Montessori schools and Montessori education has a little bit of that idea of putting into plain sight, you know, games and other things that kids can learn from. I love books. I always love to read. So I started building a library as soon as we started homeschooling. And, you know, I would interact with other friends. We would sometimes, in our homeschooling community, we might have a game day. So people would come with their games, and you'd get a chance for your kids to try out different games and play games. Well, if one was a really big hit, you know, I would put that on the next birthday or Christmas list. All our kids know, you know, when it's birthday or Christmas, you're going to get games. And so we would just, over the years, we've built up, you know, quite a big bank of games. And then I think when I first started homeschooling, I looked at things like a compass or drawing tools or a calculator. I used to hide those things away and put them away. So like when we sat down to do lessons, we would have those things. And then I started realizing if I leave them out, they play with them. And you know what? If I lose a calculator, okay, it's a few dollar calculator and I can always replace that. I'd rather it be out and be used, you know, then hide it away for the time when we're going to pull it out for, quote, you know, lessons. And so I've done that with all of our, you know, blocks. And, you know, so now we have quite a number of things. I've got four children, so I kind of get a pretty big bang out of my buck, you know, when I buy things. And so I just have a regular budget for things like this that we stock on the shelves. I put them in clear bins so you can see what they are. A lot of times I'll rotate things occasionally so they can see things that maybe got shoved in the back, you know, that they haven't tried for a while, or I might put a stack of books in the middle of the coffee table that they haven't seen for a while, and invariably, you know, they'll pick them up like they're brand new. It's a way that that I can suggest without being pushy. They may or may not pick up everything that I buy, and that's okay with me now, too. I used to have this, you know, if I buy it, they better use it, you know, kind of a mentality, and now I understand that. You know what? It's like a toy. You know, they may or they may not gravitate towards it. And so it's more trying to, if I really want them to use something, for example, the abacus, I will pull it out and I will find ways to engage them. You know, let's try to see how this thing works. Let's play some games with it. And, you know, because I have a certain relationship with my kids where I'm not pushing them, you know, frequently to do things, I can usually get their interest in engaging with me to try something. That's one of the ways that, you know, if it's not something that's getting immediate attention from them, I might do that. And so that's kind of what the strewing idea is. For my younger children, up until, you know, they really get into more of the abstract math, that's the primary source of, you know, what they learn from.
Mm-hmm.
So it works.
And do you use a computer at all, like, for math?
You know, my oldest son is not real big on the computer. He's more of the reader, but my second one, who doesn't read as much, loves the computer. So, again, birthdays and Christmas, you know, he gets CDs. He lets me know which ones he likes well enough to buy. A lot of times we'll go to the library and he'll try something out ahead of time so I'm not wasting my money on something that he's not going to like. There are a number of websites that have very good quality math games, PBS Kids. I have a number of them that are linked on my own math games page that we've found some really good math games on. And so, yeah, we involve the computer. I have some friends who do computer-based math learning, but my son has found it a little boring, so we don't actually do something like Alex or some of these other programs, but I know some other families that have great success with it. I guess another form of a computer-based math tool, if you have, you know, a large family like I do, and my oldest is approaching 14, you know, I've invested in a graphing calculator. They run around $100. And what's really nice about them is they have a display. So for like my 8-year-old, if she wants to type in equations and just kind of play around and see what happens with numbers, it's not like a regular calculator. where you just plug in a number and another number appears, you can actually see the trail of what you've input and what's come out. She'll play with that for hours at a time. And so, you know, that's another item. It's kind of expensive, and I do, you know, kind of watch to make sure it doesn't get abused, but I do leave it out and I let them play with it. Yeah, it's a $100 graphing paper, you know, calculator, but it's a tool that she's learning how to use at a very young age. My 10-year-old uses it now with some math videos, and my 14-year-old uses it in his algebra class.
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.